Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Think about what can go right when you plan for the future. Talk to a financial broker and start your savings plan today.
Now, this year marks the 30th anniversary of one of the bloodiest attacks of the Troubles. On a busy Saturday in October in 1993, two IRA men walked into a fresh fish shop on the Shankill Road and left a bomb which killed 10 people, including one of the two bombers. The IRA believed there was a meeting upstairs of the loyalist UDA leadership. In fact, the office above the shop was empty. One of those killed that day was 29-year-old mother of one, Sharon McBride, who was helping out her father, who owned the shop. Now Sharon's husband is campaigning against the UK government's legacy bill, which is being debated in the House of Lords this week. Alan McBride joins me on the programme. Alan, you're very welcome.
Hiya, thank you.
I want to get into all of the reasons why you oppose this legacy bill, but we have to go back and talk about that day. But first, tell me about Sharon, your wife. She was only 29, as I said. What was she like?
Yeah, she was lovely. We met at church, actually. I'd become a Christian when I was about probably about 19, and I worked at the time, I volunteered in the Boys Brigade, which is a church-based uniform organization, a wee bit like the Boy Scouts, and Sharon volunteered in the same organization, and so we got to know each other, and then that very quickly turned into love, and we started going out. So we went out for about 7 years, and we're married in 1987.
And you dropped her off that day, isn't that right?
Hi. So it was a Saturday morning. I usually work a Saturday in the shop, but this Saturday I was off. I worked in a butcher's just the next block down, and it was usually I usually worked every Saturday, but I just had this Saturday off, and actually got up, decided to go for a spin on my bike and to take my daughter with me. So I got the bike onto the back of the car. We have a little car seat for Zoe, and then I dropped Sharon off at the fish shop. She worked there once a month. Actually, she worked in the health service, but it was her father that owned the business, and she helped him out just on a monthly basis. And just so happened that was her Saturday that she was working, you know.
And things were going well. You had a beautiful wife, married for a number of years, a beautiful daughter, Zoe, and you dropped your wife to work in her father's shop. Everything should have been going brilliantly, Alan. And then,
yeah, totally. I mean, as I say, I worked most Saturdays myself, so I was really enjoying, actually, you know, the fact that I didn't have to work this Saturday. So that's why I went for out my bike and took my daughter with me, and then we came back, got the bike onto the car, and went back to the house. And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon that a friend called round to say that he'd heard the news that there was a bomb in the Shankill. But to be honest with you, I mean, one of the big sadnesses about growing up in Northern Ireland is that when you grew up, you know, when you knew nothing but trouble and you knew nothing but atrocities and bombings and shootings and killings, you become very complacent, you become used to it almost, and so it was no big deal really that there was a bomb. I mean, there was bombs pretty much every week, and I never thought for a moment that this would be, you know, would take obviously Sharon's life and the life of all those other people.
And that was it was part of a spate of tit for tat killings, the Shankill bomb, wasn't it?
I think that's a horrible term, but yes, that's exactly what it was. They killed one of ours, so we'd kill one of yours, and so it went on. Yeah. And in fact, a week later, the UDA went down to the Greysteel bar and shot 7 people dead, Roman Catholics, and said that was in retaliation for the Shankill bomb, as if that would bring any joy or any pleasure to me. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, in fact, you know what, the UDA called up, I think about on the Sunday, to give a wreath on behalf of loyalist prisoners, and I threw it straight in the bin, because as far as I was concerned, the IRA and the UDA and the UVF and all of those people that took a gun and went out to seek to kill and maim and blow up innocent people, they were all, for me, you know, two sides of the one coin, and I would have nothing to do with any of them.
It is just unimaginable to think of the loss and to think of the grief that you went through, your family went through, and your daughter as well. It was just two for all of those years.
Yeah, I mean, it was, at 29, you know, with your life in front of you, I mean, probably we'd have gone on to have several more children. That never happened, obviously. So it's all those things. And for me, it wasn't the anniversaries that were hard. I mean, you know, they were hard, but the hardest things were all the big milestones. You know, Zoe's first day at school, you know, her first boyfriend, her going to the big school, going to university, you know, getting engaged, and more latterly, just having my first grandchild. So, I mean, those are the huge milestones in life that, of course, Sharon's not around to enjoy. And so she was taken from me. And whilst those are very happy occasions, there's always a little tint of sadness there when you think that that the person that should be enjoying that with me is no longer able to do that, simply because some people thought that it was okay to go out onto the Shankill Road that day. And I don't care who was supposed to be meeting up the stairs, to be honest with you. There was no meeting happening that day. I do know that. And without any, you know, fear at all of the consequences of their actions in terms of killing innocent people, they very callously put that bomb into that shop and it went off and killed all those people.
Yeah, and killed Sharon, your wife, who was just 29, as you say, and all of those milestones over the decades missed as well. And sadly, she'll miss another milestone. Your little baby Zoe is obviously now grown up and will marry.
Yeah, well, and last year, actually, she became older than Sharon was, which was a huge deal for me, you know, that she had actually outlived her mother.
Yeah.
In that sense, she was older. But then, of course, little Lila came along in August, and she's just the most beautiful little grandchild. And Zoe will walk down the aisle this December, and I'll very proudly give her away. But of course, her mother will not be there to see that, and that's, you know, and we'll probably maybe toast a glass of champagne to Sharon's memory or something like that. But it would be so much better if Sharon was toasting that glass of champagne herself. But, you know, that's the cost of the troubles in Northern Ireland. I mean, people think about the deaths and all of that, but it's all the other stuff that you don't see. It's the families moving on without loved ones, and, you know, the empty chair at the table, you know, Christmas time being difficult for people, and all of that, you know. That's the hardship that people quite often don't see.
Yeah, and I think, as you wrote yourself, that's for people who find a way to cope somehow. There are many, many others who simply could not cope, and
absolutely. Well, I wrote a book actually a number of years ago where I was looking at people who died as an indirect result of the Troubles, and there were literally hundreds of people that drank themselves to death, that, you know, got involved in negative coping strategies, behaviours, you know, just died way before their time. So whilst 3,500 people were murdered, there was probably twice that many that actually also went to an early grave simply because of the result of what happened.
Tell me then, Alan, why you're against the legacy bill. We said it's going through being debated in the House of Lords this week. Why are you speaking out so much against it?
Well, to be honest with you, I've been involved in this debate since 2002 with Healing Through Remembering. They were the very first group to actually get together under the direction of the great Kate Turner. They came up with a number of ideas and proposals about how we should deal with our past, because whenever we signed the Good Friday Agreement in 1998, nobody thought about how we deal with the past. There was a clause in there that would see prisoners released from prison, but nothing about addressing the hurt and the legacy of what happened. And so Healing Through Remembering were the first organisation to go out and actually ask people about what should happen. They came up with a number of proposals. The next initiative then was in 2009, you had the Eames Bradley proposal, which of course contained the very controversial £12,000 payment, which was shelved because of that. And then you had the Hassell-Sullivan agreement, who came and did a round of consultations, and then you had the Stormont House agreement. And every time that we go back to the drawing board or go back to the negotiating table, we come away with something substantially less than what we had before. So the last attempt at that was the Stormont House agreement, and we had widespread political support for that. It wasn't perfect, and it wouldn't bring redress to everybody, but what has happened in the meantime is the British government have completely unilaterally driven a horse and cart through that. And that is all, of course, at the behest of protecting British soldiers who murdered people. So the reason that I'm shouting out about it is that this current proposals by the British government has got nothing to do with peace and reconciliation. It's got nothing to do with finding answers to families of people who were hurt, and it has got everything to do with protecting the perpetrator.
But they say they want to draw a line, allow people to move on. Prosecutions will be difficult, Alan, they say, anyway. But let's move on from this and get people information, they say. What's your response to that?
Well, look, victims and survivors, first of all, are not stupid. We know that prosecutions are difficult. We know that having our day in court is difficult. But if you're wanting to get the truth of an instance of what happened, the only way to do that is to have a proper and a thorough Article 2 compliant investigation. That is the only way you're going to get to the truth, because at the minute, under the current British government proposals, they're relying a lot on the perpetrator coming forward and telling you what they want to tell you about what happened. Truth is not going to be interrogated in the court of law, so they can effectively say what they want. And if you look at just the example, for example, of the Ballymurphy families, people that I know very, very well, and families that I have the utmost respect for, when the British Army put out the truth about what happened to their loved ones, they said that they were all gunmen and gunwomen running amok on the streets of Ballymurphy in 1971. When Justice Keegan did her her investigation and the latest court case, it came out, the truth came out, that these loved ones were not gunmen and gunwomen. They were all entirely innocent people that were actually murdered on the streets of West Belfast by the British Army. If you'd left it up to the British Army to say what happened, the truth would never have come out. And that's just one example. There are countless other examples where that is the case. The truth about the Shankill bomb, if you were to allow that narrative to continue, it would be that the IRA were after UDA men that were meeting up the stairs. They might well have been. To the best of my knowledge, there was no UDA men meeting that day, and they were able to carry out that atrocity and kill all those people. And yes, we got Sean Kelly because he was injured by his own hand. Thomas Begbie was killed, but we never got the driver. We never got the people who tried it, the common sense. I mean, there was a blind eye, I think, turned to that to that in the interest of trying to protect the peace process. So I think
would you like that investigated, Alan?
Do you know what? For me, I've heard enough. I've seen enough. I've got what I needed, and I've been able to move on with my life, so I have no particular real interest in that. But I know there's other family members that wouldn't feel like that, and they would absolutely want the people that were behind that atrocity to come and to face justice. And that's the thing around, I suppose, and the difficult thing, and I get that, that not all victims want the same thing. But, you know, for those that want to pursue these issues, either through the courts or at the very least an Article 2 complaint investigation, I think they should absolutely be allowed to do that. And, you know, the other thing as well to say is Northern Ireland and the UK is a relatively small country, but also a relatively very, very wealthy country. I mean, if they were able to do this in places like South Africa and Rwanda and some of the more poverty-stricken places from around the world, why the hell can't they do it in GB and in the United Kingdom? So I don't accept the fact that, you know, there's where there's a will, there's a way. And I mean, John Boucher has totally highlighted that.
Operation Canova, yeah.
With, Operation Canova, absolutely. I mean, he's got 31 files with the Public Prosecution Service at the moment. We work with some of the families here. In fact, some of them are actually down the stairs where I'm talking to you now, and they're in. And I can tell you that the satisfaction that they had from working with him because of the answers that he was able to get for some of the atrocities that their loved ones were caught up in. So it's a nonsense to say that there's no way of doing this. There is. John Boucher has shown us the way, and what we do is need to upscale that and to roll it out. But what is happening at the minute is this is all being driven by the need by the British government to protect British soldiers, British veterans. They don't want British soldiers to come before the courts. They don't want people like Soldier F to be appearing in the dock and all of that. That's what is driving this British government legislation.
As I say, it's going through the House of Lords. We'll see what will happen. But you are a powerful advocate against this legacy bill. And I am so sorry for your loss. And I don't think it's inappropriate in any way, given the passage of time, to say that given the context of what we're discussing, Alan. So thank you very much indeed, and I'm sorry for your loss.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Alan McBride, for joining us on Drive Time.
Okay, thank you.